Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
It's a significant, significant event for us, and it can't be understated how important it is. You know, we've been, you know, hard at work at bringing talent into the organization in different ways, and obviously the amateur draft is an obvious avenue, and now to be able to get a chance at, you know, the top talent in the draft is really exciting and just gives us a greater boost. I last year, you know, as players were joining our major league club and performing the way that they did, you know, you began to see, you know, the light at the end of the tunnel, and now it's just shining a little bit brighter.
Welcome back inside the clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score on this beautiful Saturday morning in the city. David Hall, Bruce Levine until 11 o'clock talking baseball. That was Chris Getz reacting to the White Sox getting the number one overall draft pick in the 2026 MLB draft, which brings us to our Circa Sports Illinois hotline. Download the Circa app today. That is where we find the White Sox director of amateur scouting, Mike Shirley. Good morning, Mike. How are you?
I'm great, guys. Good morning. I hope everybody's great. Thanks for having me this morning.
Well, thank you for joining us. Let's just start with the news of the week. Big news in baseball and the city of Chicago. The White Sox have the number one overall pick in 2026, the MLB draft. What can that do for an organization, and how has it energized the White Sox?
Well, I think if you look at the history of the Major League Draft, obviously this component can really change a franchise, can really set its direction, and it can be very, you know, it can allocate a lot of, like, star power, but it also, you know, comes with a lot of diligent work that we're prepared to do, and securing this pick will be something we'll work extremely hard to do. I think just listening to Chris talk about it, I think he described it very elegantly on what we've been able to try to do is bring a lot of talent into the organization. And this is just a great runway for us to secure a really good piece come next year's draft.
Mike, thanks for joining us. When you look at this, you know, many people in baseball look around and go, well, White Sox getting the number one pick, it's a slam dunk. They're going to get a great player. He'll be in the big leagues within 6 months to a year, and he'll be plugged in as the next Bobby Witt. Easier said than done, right? And how much pressure is there on you and your great staff of people that you work with, including Chris and the front office, to get it right when you have every player in out there available to you?
Yeah, it's interesting, Bruce. Like you said, there have been some pitfalls in this, right? But I think even when you look at the pitfalls of this, because it is like pressure, but what is pressure? This is a professional sport, right? I think it's what we sign up for. It comes with it. But I think all the players that have always been selected, you know, with that type of profile, I mean, their talent was always real, right? I think that kind of takes me to the fact that when you put this much responsibility in a player's hands, you have to make sure you get the right player. The makeup has to be right. We were at dinner the night we got it, you know, and our staff is Phil Nevin, who's been a great, great teammate for all of us. He's working in player development and scouting with us. And he was the number one pick in 1992, and Harold Baines was at the table as well. So we had two guys who went 1-1 overall. You know, and Phil said this relentlessly about, you know, it comes with a lot of responsibility. And I think sometimes you'll get a really talented player that the tools, the assets they bring to the field every day are going to be real. They'll be really talented players. but you want to make sure that person can handle the stress, the anxiety. Sometimes it comes with being the first overall pick. It's real. I mean, the player has to be able to handle the on and off the field expectations that come with this. So, I mean, it's fun, Bruce. I mean, I think at the end of the day, this is what where we want our club to go. We want the White Sox to have these opportunities to really grow it fast and get our fan base what they want, what they deserve.
It is fun. We're talking with White Sox Director of Amateur Scouting, Mike Shirley, here on Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. And it's fun, Mike, because there is right now, a consensus number one overall prospect, and that is Rock Chorlowski from UCLA, from Arizona. I know you guys did some work on him when he was coming out of high school. I have found it interesting how people haven't necessarily shied away from acknowledging all that is exciting about his future and his potential. You know, the family, apparently his dad is a scout. What can you tell us, I think, within the parameters of your job about Rock Chorlowski, White Sox prospect?
Well, I mean, Rocky is a very talented player. I think when you talk about his father there, what you know you're getting is a player who's been around this, right? His father was a high draft pick as well, so there's some historical value in the family nature. I think when you grow up around the game like that, they call those bloodlines real. In terms of Rock, I mean, obviously he plays shortstop at a high level. His instincts are off the charts. I do think he understands, like, the skill level, the position, the feet, the arm. You'll see him position himself at times where he has some instinctive nature to where how he approaches the game. I think he's done a lot of good things in terms of how he's let his bat develop a little bit, in terms of how he's controlling the barrel. He's much more patient with his decisions. You know, and he'll show you power in multiple directions. So I think from the scouting context of what he brings to the table, it's real how he touches those tools. And everybody loves to, like, slam it. And Rock's probably going to deal with this, right, leading up to the draft. And he is a great player. There are also other great players in this draft that we'll work really hard on. I mean, that's not a it's a consensus, like, in the media, how they present it. But there are a lot of good players in this draft.
You mentioned that, Mike.
I'm sorry to interrupt you.
You mentioned that, and it's true, Mike. I mean, the top four projected young players to be drafted in most people's chart are all shortstops. You know, two of the Chorlowski and one other is a college player. And then you have two high school players in Everson and Lombardi that everybody loves as well. So, it's not one player. Your work probably is even going to be more difficult. And then you look at Bowman and Rojas, the two top left-handed pitchers, and you go, gee, we'd love to have them as well. I mean, it's not that easy, is it?
No, it's not that easy. No, I can tell you about six shortstops between the high school and college ranks. I can tell you about three college pitchers. You can talk about Rojas and Bowman. You talk about guys that have a lot of ability. You know, and so at the end of the day, you're probably getting around 10 players that you probably need to work your tail off on and make sure that we have the makeup, you know, the tools and all the skills that come with, you know, that pick and that responsibility right. So it's a good depth of college and high school players in there. And these high school players, you mentioned Bobby Witt. I mentioned Bobby Witt earlier. I mean, that's a great player, and he's a high school player. So there's a lot of, you know, young talent in those high school ranks. You want to follow that story.
Talk about your draft pool money and how stealth a scouting director has to be to make that all work when you have a lot of money going, a huge amount of money going to your number one, and then the rest of the pool. I don't think people always understand that there's only so much money to go out there and get people to agree after you have a huge commitment to a number one.
Yeah, you want to be smart about it. I think the history of the draft always tells you where the highest signing bonus has been. You know, you want to follow the story a little bit, but the goal is to acquire as many assets as you can based on that pool space. It's supposed to be advantageous for the White Sox to be picking one, to have more resources to spend. Obviously, players come with price tags, right? So you go shopping, you try to build a build it out the best you can because you want depth to this, right? You just don't, as mentioned, focus is going to be on one. The greater goal is depth. The greater goal is landing what our second pick is, a 41 now, and maybe even stretching into the third round to be able to allocate your total pool to the depth of this, especially within the first five rounds.
Whether it's Rock Chalowski or the other shortstops who are near the top of this draft right now in terms of evaluation and projection, what is it about this crop or just shortstops in general that make, you know, Chris talked the other day, Chris Getz mentioned about he likes the problem it would present if you have four or five shortstops in your system because of their versatility positionally. I don't know if that's ideal, but Mike, what makes these athletes so pliable so you're able to use them in different ways?
Well, I think baseball players as a whole, these young kids, man, it's like playing quarterback. Playing shortstop's like playing quarterback today, right? So I do think there's a lot of draw for these young players to want to go to that position and be that type of player. I think it says a lot about their character, the nature, and how exciting that position can be. Look, are we ever going to argue about having six or seven good players on the field together? No, that's the goal of like building where the White Sox have to go. I mean, you know the conglomerates that are happening in Major League Baseball today, some of the resources that are being spent in these big cities. You have to be able to defend yourself by having great players because you can build it through drafts. And we have to execute drafts. We have to make sure the totality of our roster is built through the draft. What some of these teams are spending in free agent, yeah, it's real. So you have to be able to defend yourself and get in the competitive nature of trying to win championships by building it through the draft. So when Chris says that, his goal as a whole is to put talented players on that roster that can do multiple things. And you think about how talented defensive shortstops are. They can play all over the field. Their instincts already tell you these guys can handle a lot from a defensive nature, and their bats are generally pretty special. So if you start stacking these players together, hey, sounds like fun. Let's go.
Mike, tell us a little bit about the difference in your responsibility now under the Chris Getz run White Sox compared to with Kenny and with Rick. Before that, you know, I've been told by Chris many times that, you know, evaluations for all of our talent, not just amateur talent, we run by Mike as well. How gratifying is that? And at the same time, more work for Mike Shirley?
No, I mean, I'm always gracious. I think what the group has done, and Chris is under Chris's leadership, Chris has encompassed a lot of people to make sure everybody understands our goals, right? We talk about trust, professionalism, execution. And he has given us all mandates to understand how our jobs are supposed to work, how we're supposed to share and build together, how I always say them, their oversight committees. We're all looking over each other's shoulder to make sure we're not missing something. In terms of like even going back to Kenny and Rick, I think those guys, obviously the goal was always to get great players. It's just Major League Baseball drafts are tricky. Players present themselves to have a lot of things, health, makeup, things come up in people's lives, directions change. Sometimes just earning and building off of that can become challenging. I don't think any front office across Major League Baseball, whatever that leader ends up being, they want to acquire great talent, great services, right? But the players are different. I mean, I always say this about Garrett Crochet. There's a lot of questions about Garrett Crochet when we took him. Look what he turned out. Look what his 2025 Major League Baseball season looked like.
Yeah.
So I do think that's just front offices as a whole. They want to land. It's just not always the easiest aspect to get that all-star ability.
Really appreciate your time. We'll let you go, Mike. Before we do, just curious, in all of your scouting and research that is now going to be even more intensified because of the number one overall pick, have you found any of the other prospects who have as good of a potential nickname as Rock Chalowski? Because he's perfect for the South Side. A rock star is born. Rock and roll. Think of all the possibilities. Anybody else that you're looking at have those good of nicknames?
You know, I think, you know, just like the Justin LeBron kid at Alabama, obviously, I think his name, just because of the last name, really.
Yeah, Chicago
name, right?
Gets LeBron.
Chicago,
yeah.
Embraces LeBron.
Yeah, man.
There you go.
So I always think that he brings something unique, but Rock's got a great name. The whole thing kind of rings pretty loud. So it should be fun, guys.
Thanks, Mike.
I appreciate your time this morning, guys. All right.
Happy holidays. Well. Yep. Mike Shirley, the White Sox director of amateur scouting, Bruce. Come on. Perfect. Rock Chalowski. On the South Side, tailor-made.
It's ideal. More importantly, he's a huge talent that should...
Right.
The one thing that I want to point out before we take a break, and we got another 5 minutes here, and then we'll continue until 11 o'clock. The one thing I want to point out is because the White Sox have a young mix of star players that are starting to develop, a guy like this can fit in a lot quicker than on a veteran team, okay?
Explain that.
Because of the experience and the quality of the player fit in more readily with a younger group that's already ascending. You'll have, by the time Chrzelewski or one of these other shortstop who's picked makes it to the major leagues a year from, you know, the middle of this year, these other guys will already, you know, the Teals and the Montgomerys, Maidras, already established as young leaders mm-hmm. on a good White Sox team. Mm-hmm. That's the key. You know, I asked a couple of the White Sox front office people to name the leaders on the White Sox right now. And all of them started off with Maidras. Okay. He's not the best player. He'll never be the best player. But instinctually and aggressively, he's a White Sox South Side type player, a guy that gets the uniform dirty, makes good decisions, will positively talk to a teammate, will positively get in someone else's face.
I know what you're talking about. Yep. The mentality, he is perfect for this team at this time. And you do envision a young player, a young leader with that maybe confidence fitting in yeah. quicker on a young team than a veteran.
When I asked Venable about it 3 days ago, he mm-hmm. said, you know what, if somebody messes up out there, including himself, I hear him on the bench mumbling, just like I'm thinking he's mumbling, right? So you know, and again, he's never going to be the best player on the White Sox, but he might end up being one of the more important ones.
815, I think, texts in something that I think reflects a lot of what White Sox fans felt this week. Asks this question, quote, am I crazy as a Sox fan for actually being excited for White Sox baseball even after 2 100 loss seasons in a row? I just love watching the young guys come up and honestly make Chris Getz look like he knows what he's doing.
What other team improved by 21 games last year?
Well, it's a trick question. There were, I think, no other team that improved that to that degree. And frankly, because there was no other team as low as the White Sox were at the end of the 2024 season. So both things can be true.
So the arrow is pointed sideways?
It's a little crooked.
Yeah, okay. It's toward up, though.
Success isn't linear, Bruce. I don't know if you've heard that or not. The other question about, I think, the number one overall pick and the impact, maybe not necessarily on this offseason immediately, but we talked, maybe I think it was off the air, but the Luis Robert Jr. conundrum, it continues. He is still a member of the White Sox organization. He has one more year. And then he has one more year after that if the White Sox choke.
Right. It's a $20
million
option.
Bruce, do you think that at 28 years old, you could envision Luis Robert Jr. still being part of the White Sox organization when the number one overall pick they make in July is in a major league uniform?
You know, I don't know. It's a good question. You know, we go up and back on Luis Robert Jr. almost every week here, right? And it's like, man, that vision of him 3 years ago being one of the top outfielders in the game defensively, offensively, hitting 38 home runs. And then you look at his lack of ability to stay on the field, right? And
yeah.
that he's playing at the most two-thirds of the game. How does that really help you? You know, it's the hit factor, but also the durability factor is a key. So, you know, the White Sox can get players back, maybe not to the point of being able to roam center field like Louis does, and the possibility of him at 28 refining the hit tool. It's been 2 years now since he he's been able to hit major league pitching at a high caliber.
You just don't know where he is at this stage of his career.
Right. I mean, a lot of teams like San Diego, Philadelphia, the Mets, they're all interested in Louis. They all talk to the White Sox at the trade deadline. They're talking to them again. They figure, come to us. You don't have to be the number one guy. You don't have to be the number two guy. You can be that great center fielder for us that is going to come around with our hitting infrastructure, and you're going to be someone that helps us go to the World Series.
Let's go out to the phone lines real quick. 312-644-6767. We are talking White Sox, so that means Ron from the South Side is checking in. Ron, welcome inside the clubhouse. How are you this morning? Good morning, Ron.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Okay. Who is this now?
This is David.
Okay, Dave. Okay, I was.
Come on, Ryan. You're better. You're better than that, Ryan.
Okay, Bruce. You said. Oh, now this is why I really come. I want to commend you all for last week. I mean, the interviews that you all do, and you all ask the questions that the fans would ask. So I really want to commend you all on that. But Gene, you had him on last week. Player development.
Gene Watson.
Right. He said Luis Robert is very important to the White Sox and the city of Chicago. I guarantee you, you go down the street and ask 100 people, do they know Luis Robert? Let me get that out of here. And Bruce, you said that we go back and forth with Luis Robert. I don't. And I'm like you. I'm consistent. They need to trade him. And Chris, somebody said, well, this move making Chris look smart. I don't know. When I hear about this Luis Robert, and he said people are inquiring. But this is what he's doing, guy. He's overplaying his hand. He's looking at Luis Robert from, what, 3 years ago? So you're not getting prospects like that, especially at 20 million years. And so, I look forward. This was good news, but it's offset. He needs to be gone. What he represents, Gene said he represents what was one of the most disappointing losing teams, and I've been a Sox fan 50 years. One of the worst periods that I've went through. Worse than these 100 loss seasons, because they just did not show up. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Ryan. Appreciate the phone call. Bruce, Jorge Polanco is just signed with the Mets, just to look at some developments. So there were no moves during the winter meetings in Orlando, but today we get some free agent news. Polanco goes from the Mariners to the Mets, so he is somebody that a little bit of a utility guy, but can play third base. Makes you wonder a little bit about the third base market moving forward?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, you know, third base is not a real strong position in baseball, period, okay? You know, the old years of the first baseman and third baseman all being big power hitters in both teams, that's not easy to quantify anymore.
What are the Cubs going to do at third base? Ian Happ, of all people, the Cubs outfielder, addressed one of the possibilities during his podcast. We will hear that next on Inside the Clubhouse. David and Bruce till 11 o'clock, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
For some chin music.
Hey, Al, how about a warning?
Sure.
Watch out you don't get killed.
Because sometimes in baseball, you've got to send a strong message, especially when someone has it coming. Each Saturday, David and Bruce come in high and tight with a response to something that deserves one, like this.
One thing that's interesting about Bregman and the Cubs is just the way that our lineup is constructed and the fact that our young guys are predominantly left-handed in Pete, Bush, Ballesteros, Casey.
You're still young.
Well, yeah, but I can hit from both sides.
Ooh!
But the fact that those guys are all left-handed, bringing in a right-handed bat helps you a little bit with lineup construction. You know, Nico crushed lefties this year. I think Bregman's always hit lefties very well. Dansby's always hit lefties very well. Saya crushes lefties. When you have that where you can space out your lefties in between guys that really hit lefties well and make the other manager think twice about it, and those things are, you know, the advantages to adding kind of a right-handed thumper into the middle of that lineup.
Welcome back inside the clubhouse. David Hall, Bruce Levine till 11 o'clock. Ian Happ on the Compound Podcast. Very well done, very compelling, very direct. Bruce, how unusual is it for you to hear a player advocate or support the idea of adding somebody who was a free agent on a team that he would obviously be replacing somebody?
It's very refreshing, and it's Ian Happ, who doesn't pull punches and is always direct about when he's asked a question, especially on his podcast. So I don't think any team feels bringing in Bregman is a bad idea. I don't think any teammates would feel bad about it, considering his reputation beyond the gold glove at third and beyond the potent bat that normally is 800-plus OPS-wise, is terrific teammate. First guy in, last guy out, represents himself and his teammate as well as anybody. You know, there's so many things about Bregman that teams like, right? So you talk about the peripheries other than the hard facts and the number or the WAR number. You know, there's nothing you don't like about him other than he didn't play enough games last year because of an injury to the leg.
Clear upgrade. Alex Bregman would make the Cubs obviously maybe a favorite in the division, depending on whether the Brewers lose Peralta.
That and a starting pitching ad.
And a starting pitching ad. Do you think there will be anything financially that would get in the way? You talked to Scott Boras this week. You were there for the entirety of the winter meetings. You said earlier in the program he might be looking at $35 million per year. Last year, Alex Bregman was too rich for the Cubs' blood. How about this offseason? What's changed, and is there anything on the Cubs that would be an impediment to adding Alex Bregman?
Yeah, well, Matt Shaw sticks out, right? Are you going to stop projecting Matt Shaw as your third baseman for the future? Is he your second baseman? Is he your super utility guy that adds to the bench where Council, as Hoyer talked about at the winter meetings, doesn't have to play his players every day? Hoyer talked about the fact he doesn't want his starting players playing every day. He thinks it's a detriment. He feels the Cubs got lucky this year that nobody got hurt in the starting eight.
I wonder. I mean, I would love to be in the room when the Cubs are discussing the future of Matt Shaw. Number one, from a baseball perspective, what he did and what he didn't do. Number two, I mean, the optics for Matt Shaw are going to be challenging for the Cubs moving forward. Next weekend, he speaks at a Turning Points America Fest political rally. And he left the team during the season, and people were forgiving and understood that. He attended the memorial service for Charlie Kirk during the midst of a playoff run. And I think a young player like that got the benefit of the doubt. I wonder, moving forward, Bruce, do the optics, because he's aligning himself with people who some, well, this isn't a political conversation necessarily, it's about the perception. And if he's aligning himself with people who are aligned with intolerant viewpoints and politics, does he make it harder to reinvest faith in, to put in a clubhouse where you want to be? It is one of the great things about sports. It's a melting pot. And you want everyone in there to be viewed that way. And I just wonder if the Cubs have any concerns moving forward about that element of Matt Shaw, about whether or not that's going to be a problem in a clubhouse. It wouldn't be the first time that somebody in sports was judged without necessarily judging the talent, but other things that come with the player. So I don't know how they feel about him and all of that. I do know this week we heard them vehemently defend and support Matt Shaw, the young prospect. I thought it was almost over the top, the way that they went out of their way, from Craig Counsell to Carter Hawkins to Jed Hoyer, speak about Matt Shaw. And like, what was causing that? Why do you think they did that?
I mean, I don't care personally as a reporter what someone's politics are, what their religion is, what their race is. All I care about is what I see as far as what type of teammate he is, what type of work ethic he has, how he fits in with the club. Matt Shaw has all these positives working for him, okay? Fits in great with his teammates, works his butt off, is pretty humble about whether he's good or bad, doesn't let that interfere. I think he's going to be a really good ball player for a long time. Now, if you're going to judge him for his politics and whether or not that's going to be a distraction.
I don't think you're judging him for his politics. Let me be clear there. I think that if you are a professional sports organization, whether it's a baseball team or an NFL team or any sport in any time, coaches who care about outcomes wonder about what distractions a player might create. And if you are a distraction, you are more of a liability than somebody who isn't. That is undeniable. And I think that when you see different guys are worth different levels of distraction, depending on your production level. And it's like anybody, not in this case, but somebody comes to your team with baggage. You're willing to tolerate more if the production is high enough. And I just wonder where they are in that calculus in regard to Matt Shaw.
I don't see baggage here. But
not baggage, but distraction, Bruce. It's a potential distraction.
Yeah, but I mean, we don't know the politics or religion of every player. This one happens to be out there because it's an electric shock of... You know, this man, Charlie Kirk, was murdered.
Let's not get too far afield. I'm talking about this strictly from the standpoint of we don't know everybody's politics or religion or things like that because it's none of our business as long as it doesn't interfere with the production level of a professional athlete. Professional athletes have a right, like every one of us, to pursue those things and be part of those type, whatever they believe in. But if it affects the attention and creates a potential distraction, it's a conversation worth having. I'm not saying you come to any conclusions this morning or this week, but if you're the Cubs and you're talking about the future of Matt Shaw, I think this is part of the conversation.
Yeah, I'm not so sure about that. I mean, again, it's a high-profile situation that he's involved with, but I look at the work ethic of the individual, the type of individual he is, which they know better than anyone else.
They know
better.
They see the player. Right. They drafted him. They developed him. They trusted him.
So I can't go in that area other than to say I can try to project what type of player he's going to be, right? And if you have Bregman and you have Nico Hoerner, and Nico Hoerner signs an extension – and you give Bregman a 4 to 5 year deal, there's no room for Matt Shaw on this team. He is a trade chip, okay? And there's nothing wrong with that. Nothing at all.
If you sign Alex Bregman, you are dangling Matt Shaw in trade conversations?
Absolutely. I mean, why wouldn't you?
It would be a duplicate part.
Right.
And it would be redundant in your
lineup.
But it's
not to say he's not going to be good. The team that's trading for him is just like the Cam Smith trade with Tucker last year. The ideal trade is that both players are really good, and they are very happy with Cam Smith in Houston. Mm-hmm. And the Cubs arguably wouldn't have made it to 92 wins without Tucker this year, okay? So I think they got the very most out of that. I don't think they'll be afraid to trade Shaw if they have Bregman again.
Well, it sounded like they were at least trying to let people know how good of a player they think he is. Jed Hoyer earlier this week at the winter meetings talked about the young third baseman who also can play second. And from, again, the manager to the general manager to here the team president, all publicly backed Matt Shaw.
I've been surprised by the number of media reports that, you know, like that kind of link us to, you know, to different guys. And like there's zero lack of confidence in Matt. Actually, I would say the opposite. I think that when you look at his overall second half numbers and, you know, kind of what he did in the minor leagues, and I just think that those struggles are to be expected at the beginning. You know, the outliers are the ones that don't have that. So I thought what he did on defense last year was amazing. You know, I think that from, you know, not learning a new position, but like, you know, definitely an opposition he's the most familiar with, and to, I thought it was like gold glove quality defense by the end of the year. So I actually thought there was a lot of huge positives last year, and like he sort of told me at the beginning of the year this was going to be the totality of his season, I would have been like, I'm good. We're in a good place.
Jed Hoyer on Matt Shaw, who was nominated, I believe, for a gold glove.
Yeah, he's top three.
Year. Yeah.
But, David, I think, to be honest with you, them saying nice things about their player, they would say that even if they thought they were going to trade him.
Especially because they want the team...
Sure.
We want the teams that might be interested publicly they are backing.
We can't get carried away with manager and front office speak, okay? They're not going to tell you what their real hand is, right? They're going to listen. Their job is to listen for every player and to try to make their team better. You never hold that against a manager or front office. I think Shaw's going to be a good player. Is he going to be as good as Bregman? Yeah, that would be great, wouldn't
it? Alex Bregman had a terrific career.
Yeah, he's been to the playoffs 8 years in a row.
Yeah, he's a winning player who still has a lot of production. Last year, I think he ran into some health issues. But if you put him in your lineup at third base in the middle of that batting order, you've changed the complexion of next season.
Exactly. I mean, that's the one thing, if you're a manager or if you're a fan and you look at Bregman in the top five hitters, that changes.
Well, Ian Happ spelled it out pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, it was like Tucker last year.
Would he have the same impact on this lineup that Kyle Tucker did a year ago?
It might have a stronger one.
Where's Kyle Tucker going to end up? Toronto still?
I would say Mets, Toronto. You know, you can never count out the Dodgers.
What do you make of some of the things that you probably have heard whispers about Kyle Tucker and his fit and his work ethic and anything that has come out in what I think is just an attempt to – there have been reports about Kyle Tucker not being fully invested in his rehab and things like that. I don't think they're fair, but I wonder if what you think of the player.
He's an extraordinarily hardworking player in his own – developmental mind. So he puts in the work, he does the work. It's mostly internalized. It's not including coaching for the teams he's been on. I talked to Dusty Baker about him at the winter meetings, and he said he's a real good player. I said, you know, I said before I even got the word out, he goes, he's not your one or two guy.
What was Dusty Baker doing at the winter meetings? Just curious.
He was there because he is going to be the manager for the Nicaraguan team, I believe.
Wow.
In the WBC.
Dusty Baker still managing.
Yeah, yeah.
That's awesome.
So, but his comment to me was, there's only one guy that he really responds to well about his hitting tool, and that's Michael Brantley, his old teammate with Houston. He says... That's the only guy that he'll listen to about hitting mechanics otherwise. And he doesn't push away. He just gets deeply involved in his process.
Alex Bregman still in play for the Cubs. We'll keep an eye on that story. Jorge Polanco going to play first base for the Mets. Signed to a 2-year, $40 million contract this morning. We're back out inside the clubhouse to wrap things up right after this break. It's Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
Welcome back. It's into the clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 The Score. David Haw, Bruce Levine wrapping things up after a week at the winter meetings that was uneventful but productive. And the biggest story in baseball, I think you could make an argument that it was Pete Alonso going to the Orioles. I think Kyle Schwarber, future Hall of Famer, potentially going to the Phillies, staying in Philadelphia. Maybe that's less of a story because Pete Alonso's leaving New York for Baltimore. Both those, though, blockbuster moves this week because you started to wonder if Schwarber was going to be relocated. And Alonso willingly leaving New York. Big problem there for a big spender, Steve Cohen. Yeah.
Well, you know, the Polanco signing is minor compared to what they have to do. They still have to get a big bat to replace, you know, Nimmo and Alonso leaving. So with that in mind, you know, you think about whether it's Tucker, whether it's Bellinger, whether Bellinger ends up with an enormous amount of years and money that he didn't expect because there's a bidding war between the New York teams.
Let's talk about the Cub bullpen for a second in our final segment here. Hobie Milner, the lefty.
Right.
The side-arming lefty,
right,
88 mile per hour fastball,
spin rate,
yeah, it's got the spin rate. But Bruce,
so same with Maton when they signed the week before.
Maton, Milner, guys who don't necessarily have.
You're going to say why not Suarez?
Well, Suarez signed with the Braves, and there was a lot of money for Suarez. Yeah. But if you have a situation where they were seeking swing and miss stuff, I don't know that they got guys who have that kind of high velocity. So I just want them to be consistent.
They do have swing and miss stuff. It just doesn't happen to be 100 miles an hour, right? So the Cubs are very confident about the fact that they can identify guys that are striking out people in the 29 to 33% tile of people that they face without having to have the 100-mile-an-hour fastball.
You don't see them going out now. There's no really closers left on the market that would make any sense. I have to ask you about one name, though. I have to ask you about a name that is out there as a relief pitcher in free agency. Where will Michael Kopech land?
I don't know, because that's just a roll of the dice because of his injury history, right? He just started to come around a couple of years ago when the Dodgers picked him up from the White Sox. You know, we had talked ad nauseum here for years about how Kopech was going to be a bull. I talked for years about how Kopech needed to be in the bullpen and just, you know, go out there with that raw stuff and throw it. I don't know where he's going to go. I think the Cubs, you know, Brad Keller would be a really good re-add for them.
How close are they to him? Because another team's looking at Brad Keller because of the way he finished last season.
You know, as Brad said to me the last day of the season, look, I have to go out there and get the best deal I can. I want to be with the Cubs. They've been great to me, but, you know, I've resurrected my career. I got to listen to the best deals possible. And with these other guys going off, you know, Brad continues to look better and better as time goes on.
Cicerillo reminds me that, how about Edwin Diaz going to the Dodgers? That was huge story this week as well.
So two things have changed the free agent market significantly here. The signing of Cease to a $30 million a year times seven, and the signing of Diaz to a record for a relief pitcher or a closer, $23 million a year times three. Say it slowly. Say it again.
That's a lot of money.
He's the dominant closer in the game, but $23 million a year skews the other 29 teams' payrolls when you're looking to add another bullpen piece.
I remember what I wanted to ask you now before we get out of here. Kyle Teal, former Red Sox prospect, White Sox catcher, could be the face of this team moving forward. The Red Sox want him back. They don't?
No, they do.
The answer is no. Okay, good.
Teal is the face of what the White Sox front office feels their organization for the next 6 years, right? So he does have 6 years of, you know, eligibility before he's a free agent.
6 years of moving around positions or 6 years of being the catcher?
I think he's the catcher. If there's a catcher being traded by the White Sox, it's Carroll.
Wow.
You know.
Why wouldn't you keep both?
Because
they're likely to keep both,
because
right?
You really don't need both. You can't. How many teams have two star catchers?
Is he a star catcher?
Other teams will think that he's a 110, 120 game.
Corey Lee is catcher. A guy that I would dangle if anybody wants a third catcher.
Lee might be your best option as your second catcher.
So Edgar Carroll, you think, was more likely to be moved? Kyle Teal is untouchable.
So. And Carroll, I like everything about Carroll. He's got a tremendous amount of ability, leadership ability. He's got some experience now, but I don't think there's any room in the inn for two really high quality catchers.
You know how crazy I got about the White Sox this week, Bruce? I got a little carried away. I was already putting together their 2028 opening day lineup.
And you had Teal at second base?
No, I had Teal, I think, as a designated hitter. Or maybe I had George Wolkel as a DH. I was moving him to first base potentially in one of the iterations.
It's a fun part of the offseason to just start piecing together in your mind what your team will look like and what the lineups would look like next year.
Bruce, you had a good week. You were active on Marquee out in the winter's meetings.
You give me a C+, or what do you?
I definitely think you were A+ material. I think it was a very strong week for you on the the screen and off, and on the air and off. So thank you for
putting together. I appreciate it, David. I wish there was more activity, but there will be more activity, especially for the Cubs, as they continue to look at this pitching market, see if Bregman fits in. We were warned by so many front office people this week that the trade market is going to probably start to evolve in 2027.
One would hope, 26. Because the Cubs are close. I just would like to see them do something to put them over the top. Make a deal. Thank you to our guests, Pat Murphy and Mike Shirley. Thank you to Bruce for setting that up, and thank you to Adam Studzinski for keeping us on the air.
David, have a good week off next week. I think Mike and I will be in doing our regular stuff.
Next Saturday morning, the Bears and Packers that Saturday night, so I guess I'll be resting up for that big matchup. They play football on the lakefront.
Get your reps in.
Yeah, get my reps in. All right, thanks for everyone for listening to Inside the Clubhouse. Steve Rosenblum is next. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcasts.